This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross. Mercedes McCambridge, the Oscar-winning actress whose career stretched from the radio dramas of Orson Welles in the 1940s to Neil Simon's Broadway comedy Lost in Yonkers in the 90s, died earlier this month of natural causes in La Jolla, California. She was 87. McCambridge began working as an actress on Chicago radio, doing local and national dramas and soap operas right after finishing college. Shortly after she married her first husband, at age 23, they moved to Hollywood, where she received great acclaim as a radio performer. She was a regular on I Love a Mystery and appeared often on the radio programs of Orson Welles, who called her the world's greatest living radio actress. Her first big break outside radio came when she was cast in one of the key roles in a 1948 Broadway adaptation of the Robert Penn Warren novel All the King's Men. She played Sadie Burke, a cynical reporter who, like many people in the drama, fell under the spell of corrupt Southern politician Willie Stark, a character Warren modeled on Louisiana Governor Huey Long. The following year, McCambridge reprised her role for the movie version. It was her first performance on film, and she won a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for it. Here she is with John Ireland, who plays Stark's right-hand man, Jack Burden. Sadie hasn't joined the campaign yet, but despite her tough talk, it won't be long before she does.
Do you mind if I sit with you, Sadie?
Stand, sit.
Thanks. Then tell me, what are you on this merry-go-round for?
I take notes.
For whom?
For those whom pay me.
Which is?
People.
Smart people.
Yeah, anybody that pays me is smart.
You don't have to be smart to frame a guy like Willie Stark.
No, brother, you don't.
It is a frame, isn't it?
Why don't you give me a cigarette?
Split the vote and win the election for Harrison, huh?
You know why he asked.
I just want to make sure. Yeah. Look, why don't you tell the boys home to save their money? Willie couldn't steal a vote from Abe Lincoln in the cradle of the Confederacy.
I wish the poor had enough sense to have somebody give him a good greasing for the beating he's going to get. Because this way all he gets out of it is the ride. Hey, those speeches. Ain't they awful? Ain't they just plain awful? Question to you. If somebody told him he was a sucker, you think he'd quit?
I don't know, Sadie. I really don't know.
But after that dazzling debut, Mercedes McCambridge had only sporadic success in films. Some of her most memorable performances were in films where she played tough, often abrasive characters. Working again with Orson Welles, this time on film, in The Touch of Evil, she played a lesbian motorcycle gang leader. In Giant, she played Rock Hudson's domineering older sister. In the 1954 Western Johnny Guitar, she stood firm opposite Joan Crawford, who starred as Vienna, owner of a saloon at the outskirts of town. McCambridge plays Emma Small, a town official who accuses one of Vienna's friends, the Dancing Kid, of robbery and murder, and shows up with a small posse to force Vienna to give him up.
Someone holds up the stagecoach. Your brother is killed, and all you can think about is hanging the Dancing Kid. You know he didn't do it. You all know it. What's your real reason, Emma? Because he's a killer. What has he killed? Why do you hate him so? What did he ever do to you? Maybe you don't hate him.
If you've got something to say, you'd better say it, Vienna.
Let Emma say. I wouldn't spit on him. Oh, he was always eyeing me. I never told my poor brother because Len would have killed him. That's why he held up the stage and killed my brother, because now he thinks he can get me. That's why. You've got it a little twisted, haven't you, Emma? Now you think you can get him.
She's crazy.
You want the kid and you're so ashamed of it, you want him dead. You want me dead, too. Then maybe you can sleep nights.
I won't sleep till I see both of you hanged. You and the kid and all of your filthy kind. Look at her, standing up there staring down on us like a somebody. Go get her, drag her down.
I've never done a thing to hurt any of you. Don't make me do it now.
You're nothing but a railroad tramp. You're not fit to live among decent people.
Off-screen, McCambridge could be just as feisty. In her memoirs, she described her Johnny Guitar co-star Crawford as a mean, tipsy, powerful, rotten egg lady. Late in her life, in 1992, McCambridge returned to Broadway for one more triumph, playing the crusty grandmother in Neil Simon's Lost in Yonkers. In between, though, was perhaps her most popular and memorable role of all, and one which relied greatly on her skills as a radio actress. In the 1973 movie The Exorcist, McCambridge played one of the scariest characters in the history of the movies, using only her voice. She created the voice that came out of the possessed little girl Reagan, played by Linda Blair. When Terry Gross spoke with Mercedes McCambridge in 1981, she asked her how she created the voice of the devil.
The Exorcist demon is a radio performance in a film.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 100% radio. But I had such a great teacher in college that I can go now from what is a rather high and thin and reedy tone of what I am doing all the way without any effort whatsoever down to the absolute coarseness of what I'm doing. And on back up without any problem whatsoever. Young actors are doing themselves a great disservice by not using the voice as much as they should as the best possible tool for communication. Everybody talks about projection. The hardest, the most difficult projection in the world is into this microphone. That's where the projection counts. The timbre has to be so much deeper than to use a voice full of stentorian tones in a theater reaching 5,000 people. That's nowhere near so difficult as coming down to the thing of trying to convey to someone, I love you. Do you know how much I love you? That's exciting. And it's all a funny little instrument inside us with a lot of timpani going and muted sounds.
Let's get back to The Exorcist. How did you figure out what the right speech would be and the wheezing sound that you developed?
Well, the speech was nothing. You know, and I read, reread some of Kazantzakis' things about Lucifer. And I wanted to cry as Lucifer cried. But it's very hard to... We taped them on with 8 different microphones with the people in the control room at Warner Brothers in this most sophisticated sound studio. And they would have them at different levels, and the microphones open them to various degrees or non-degrees of acceptance. And in one place, I had to vomit. On the screen, you see the green vomit from the girl's mouth, the bile, and it comes out in a projectile kind of way. Well, what it is pea soup with cornflakes in it to make the bumps of vomit. Now, I had to make that sound. And the way I finally did it, and it was only through stumbling and invention, again, you know, as Stanislavski says, you utilize it, I would have them bring me apples, sections of apple, and I would put a whole bunch of those mushy apples in my mouth, and then from a Dixie cup, I would put in 2 eggs that had been just broken into the cup, not mixed up, just the yolk lying there looking at you, 2 of those, and at a signal from the control room when the frame of the film, which I was watching on the big screen in the empty sound studio, when it came up to the point where the little girl with the pea soup and the cornflakes coming out of tubes that were built up from the back of her bed and then around the outside of her cheeks and then her cheeks covered with makeup with spouts in her mouth, I had to time that precisely to the frame by swallowing these sections of apple, which were to be the lumps, and then the eggs down to mid-gullet, and then forcing the diaphragm muscles, and then throwing it up on 8 microphones covered with a tarp. That's very hard. It's you have a hard time doing that. Again, Stanislavski says you can utilize anything that's ever happened to you. All my life I've wheezed, particularly when I was smoking, thank God. I don't know if I could play the demon in the same way now because I don't smoke anymore. But when I did, I wheezed a lot. And I didn't know how to get the breath of the demon across. And I wonder now if I can do it. Let's see, because my lungs have been cleared now of smoke for almost 3 years. So there isn't that awful bronchial hacking noise in there. But getting very close to the microphones, and it's hard to wheeze for any length of time. First of all, you have to wait until all of the air is out of the bellows of the lungs, and then you can maybe for a few seconds sustain it. But Blatty says in the book it had an unearthly sound, the devil's breathing, that could be heard through the open door. But if I get very close to the microphone, maybe I can do it. Well, that's very hard to do because you're gagging and you're forcing right down to the ultimate, the last breath that you have in your body. You do that for 5 or 10 minutes and you have to go lie down for a while and come back and do it again. Very exhausting.
There's a great story that you tell in your book that I'd love for you to tell us. Mm. It's about a radio drama you're doing with Boris Karloff, in which I guess he's a vampire and
of
he
course
sucks
he was
your
a vampire.
Blood. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a great sound effect that I'd like you to tell us about.
We couldn't find anything. This gentleman, Boris Karloff, was the vampire who had broken my neck or would break my neck in the show and suck the blood. And he's standing on one side of the microphone going and everything, and I'm making anguished little noises on the other side, dying of the broken neck and the blood being sucked. But we couldn't find any sound that would really give the impression of the bones in the body or the neck breaking. And Tommy Horan, the sound man at NBC in Chicago, bought a whole sheaf, if that's the word, of spare ribs. And he had a cleaver, and he was pounding at these spare ribs, and they were flying off like pterodactyls' toenails into the corners of the studio. Just really awful. But it wasn't the sound that it should be. So then in one of the drawers of his utility table, he found some peppermint lifesavers. And he put a peppermint lifesaver, I wish I had one now, on end between his back teeth and got very close to his microphone, the sound microphone, and crunched. And you'd hear these little bits, these little flakes of peppermint lifesaver being disintegrated. And it sounded like every small bone in the neck was being split. It was just great. So he was over there doing that with his mastication, and I'm groaning, and Boris is going, oh, it was sensational. But it was just a lifesaver.
That's such a great story.
Yeah, yeah. In radio, we had them like that.
Mercedes McCambridge, speaking with Terry Gross in 1981. McCambridge died earlier this month at the age of 87. Let's hear that scene from The Exorcist they were discussing in the interview.
Hello, Reagan. I'm a friend of your mother's. I'd like to help you.
You might loosen the straps, huh?
I'm afraid you might hurt yourself, Reagan.
I'm not Reagan.
I see. Well, then, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Damien Karras.
And I'm the devil. Now kindly undo these straps.
If you're the devil, why not make the straps disappear?
That's much too vulgar a display of power, Karras.
Where's Reagan?
In here with us.
Show me Reagan and I'll loosen one of the straps.
Can you help an old altar boy, Father?
Your mother's in here with us, Karras. Would you like to leave a message? I see that she gets it.
If that's true, then you must know my mother's maiden name. What is it? What is it?